In the Buddhist teaching, it is said, as I mentioned earlier, that wherever you start with the Dhamma, it gets you to the whole Dhamma. And this natural arising practice method is based on a similar aspiration in a much, much more modest way, that wherever you start, you get to see how these other aspects just arise naturally. And so this afternoon, I would like to start with as though we were doing a natural arising retreat, and we started with the renunciations, and we'll go through them again. And then we will do the arriving sequence, and we'll see how naturally that humility and integrity and dignity arise just naturally. So this is what we will do, and then we'll have an afternoon like we've done in every other segment of these other segments of this. We're being a little more gentle. The sits won't be as long or anything like that. We'll be gentle because we're in the last stage of our time together, so we want to be gently transitioning back into the regular world. Recognizing this key word, recognizing, recognition, recognition. That's the noun, the verb, recognizing. Again, the Pali language was verb-oriented, so it would be the four ennobling truths, not the four noble truths. So recognizing that a lot of the time that we have, the hindrances arise in the mind. It is in relation to judging and comparing and fixing. So we once again take these vows of renunciation. This time we're familiar with them. This time we've seen the positive effect. This time we've seen how they organize our attitude towards practicing. They give us a way to understand what arises when we're looking at objects in the mind. We see our relationship to objects in the mind, and we have an antidote for getting caught in them through these renunciations. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce judging mind as best I am able. The duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I am able. So, staying with this experience, we've set an intention, we've set a practice intention. We set a relatedness intention to not yield to these compulsions of judging, comparing, fixing as best we're able. as measured in the authentic examination of practice, is there room here for me to be more skillful in not judging or comparing or fixing? And that, as best I am able, makes it not one more act of judging or comparing or fixing. It makes it an appraisal of our relatedness to the renunciation. Important distinction. So here we are, here you are. In this moment, is there very much judging in the mind? There can be inquiry. You can be aware of something, you can be aware of its skillful or unskillfulness without having to be judging. It's the way it is. And the same with comparing mind. Is it strong or weak at this point? Is there openness around experience so that there's not this compunction to compare? And the same with fixing mind. In this moment, is there some absence of fixing mind? Maybe that there's not zero, but it's not so active. You can feel the absence of the pressure of it right now. In Buddhism, we do a lot of noticing presence and absence. And so we then turn to as best I am able. Is it grounded, this as best I am able? Or is it more an idea than really an intention, more of a set way of practice? Because as best I am able is a practice. So is something in the way of our best I am able attitude, way of relating? Whatever your emotional relationship to as best I am able right now, the way you're feeling it, the way you're experiencing it, as a body recognition. If you bring humility into this, as best I am able, get expansive, more expansive, or more firm, more grounded. May as best I am able be fortified, strengthened through my acknowledgement of humility. More an aspiration than I will. Is as best I am able in this moment served, enhanced, strengthened, given a ground, when you connect your sense of inner innate dignity, so that as best I am able has the voicing, it's like if there's a rope and one of the cords was humility, the second one is as best I am, the second one is the dignity, the innate dignity. How do they wrap around, strengthen this cord of as best I am able, making a larger rope of it? Felt sense, felt sense. In your resolve to renounce judging, comparing, and fixing, is the resolve strengthened if you Notice your own integrity, your capacity for integrity, and you're actually living it in relation to these renunciation. Just reflecting on it, just knowing from your experience of today and yesterday, just touching this strengthen as best I am able. This integrity, does this integrity strengthen as best I am able? Can you imagine, open to the possibility, maybe have a hint of an inkling that when all three of these are in balance, your as best I am able intentionality takes on more of a elevated mission. Your sincerity, the very integrity of the commitment to as best I am able comes alive more. Has more dimensionality. And so as best I am able can be like a presence in the psyche, a presence that allows you to have a connection to being in resonance with as best I am able. Even as life is going on and you're dealing with one thing after another. So for this moment, you're acting as though, opening to the possibility that the hindrances, the judging, comparing, and fixing kind of hindrances, are quieter, not perfectly quiet, but quieter. And as best I am able, is grounded in the psyche and grounding you. This feels like a true orientation to relating to the moment through mindfulness. So it's grounding. What then arises? Thoughts may come and go, body sensations may come and go. But what's the reception to things that arise and pass? More specifically, is this attitude, this directional attitude of relating, is there more space around an experience that ordinarily you might immediately judge, compare, or fix? You have that feeling of somehow needing to evaluate, choose between or among, consider. Is there a sense of more space? Even if it's imagined, because you are in a kind of an imagined world right now, that's fine. Is it more spacious? If the compulsion to judge or to compare or to fix or two or three of those is not present, what is the absence of as a felt experience? More space, possibly. Lack of compunction, lack of being compelled. more choice, possibly. So something's arisen in your behavior. And is this skillful or not skillful? You need to know for your practice, but you don't make the big judgment about you. It's just, is this skillful or not? Can you notice space around the experience? How does one relate to, do I make this activity of judging continue, this kind of appraising? How do I make it? What are my resources when I'm not using my fixed view of judging? It then becomes an inquiry. Inquiries start with the don't know mind, an availability. And in this spaciousness, in this availability, with the modesty of humility and inner dignity, and the ground, the clarity of integrity, can you feel the possibility of wisdom, wisdom, and so far as wisdom is present in this moment, allowing wisdom to inform your evaluation. You're relying, you can call forth, may wisdom bring me clarity. You could be having a specific consideration, I'm doing it in the abstract. May wisdom bring me clarity. And the same with comparing. You're having to choose one or the other, which would be more skillful, which would be more serving. You're doing a kind of appraising to choose among options. Does this recognition of what is being called for, not from the ego, judging, comparing, and fixing, but from the circumstances? A circumstance is arising in terms of wise relation. That's all. How's the right way to relate to this? Does this sense of wise relating to this start to make sense to you in this as best I am able, where you can feel the presence of wisdom as a capacity. Wisdom as a capacity is present, and it can be what? Recognized. Oh, there's spaciousness around the experience, and in the spaciousness, wisdom can arise, and wisdom doesn't have a big agenda. It's there to serve. Oh, a spacious relationship with appraising. Likewise, with fixing. This rush to fix, this abandoning the experience, which we so often do. We abandon the experience before we've stayed with it long enough to see where it's sticky, where we're getting caught, what's really being called for here. We don't take time for all that. We just start fixing. So in this knowing the wise relationship to the impulse to fix, we see that with humility, with dignity, with integrity, we can be examining something. Like, we don't know what to do. This could be happening in moments, or happening in minutes, or over an hour, or over many hours, or a day, or weeks, or so forth. That there can be, looking here in this thought exercise, this acting as though, that wisdom can be present. When the compulsion, the narrowing in, the grabbing hold of our experience lets loose, then wisdom is there to relate. The wisdom will be limited by our own previous experience around something like this, whatever it is. It will be limited by our energy and everything, how tired we are. But wisdom can still be at play. We can be resting back in wisdom. We know that wisdom is present and seeking what is wise choice. And likewise, we can have an experience of our judging and comparing and fixing where we step back, we step away from it, we negate it, we cease to feed it. And so there's a spaciousness that arises around a decision, a preference, how much to push to get something just the way we want it. And in this experience, is there room for compassion? Can you be thinking about a parent, a child, a friend, a situation at work, where there does need to be some sort of differentiation, some sort of deciding, evaluating, choosing among? Can you feel how compassion naturally fits in? It can be in the form of direct support. It can be in the form of being gentle with yourself, taking a break before you make a decision, getting some fresh air, whatever it might be. But it's a deliberate act that's coming out of compassion. Wisdom has in it the seeds of compassion. Compassion has in it the seeds, or maybe even more than just seeds, of wisdom. Can you take wisdom and compassion as your, let's just take wisdom first. Let's take wisdom as our object of meditation, our object of attention. What is wisdom in relating to objects? and relating to our values from which we determine what is wisdom for you. It's a value that you have certain values that has to do with relation. You want to be wise in how you're relating to events, to environment, to others, to yourself, to whatever combination. To have a wise relationship. It's true, isn't it? And what we learn is that the more present we are, the more not driven to get it perfectly right, the more wisdom can show up in our life. And now, with compassion, judging, comparing, and fixing are in abeyance, not necessarily perfectly gone, but in abeyance. Just like the hindrances are not arising, so these three activities are not arising. Can you feel the spaciousness when they're not arising? You can sometimes feel them as absence of judging, absence of comparing, absence of fixing, particularly when you're dealing with one that's so compulsive and strong, frequent in you. You notice the absence, and it can be very onward leading. This is felt sense. Felt sense. And when this wisdom, as best it can be, given our karmic conditioning and our immediate circumstance, when this compassion starts to blossom in us, what is that felt sense? And is the presence, the active, alive presence of wisdom and compassion, cultivate a further union? Leading us forward, allowing us to go forward in our understanding. And in noticing and in the truth of the absence of judging, comparing, and fixing, and in the truth of the presence of wisdom and compassion, notice the quality of mind. The mind heart. This base of wisdom and compassion, when that is the predominant experience in the mind heart, this new capacity reveals itself, new because it's been covered over with so much judging, comparing, and fixing. And this is discerning mind. a mind can discern. You do not have to go through all of these steps we're going through now. You will recognize when it's present or absent. You trust your decision-making, you're evaluating more when you feel this flexibility, this ability to assume the form of the question. This discerning mind. So now discerning mind is our object. Just as wisdom and compassion became our object, now discerning mind is our object. Do you recognize this feeling of discerning mind? Allowing discerning mind to be as present as it is, not having views and opinions about it. But you are in a sympathetic relationship with life. You're in harmony with life. So the I-ness is quieted down because you've renounced judging, comparing, and fixing. The referencing, the self-referencing is now de-emphasized, and the access to wisdom is there in reality and as an aspiration. Whatever degree of wisdom is present, that's what you work with. But the aspiration is towards an integrated wisdom, and the same with compassion. And then you can start to feel into how this discerning mind is a natural arising capacity. Naturally arising, naturally arising. We can establish ourselves in this naturally arising mind state of discernment. And it is there. We can feel how supple the mind is. We can feel that it is made up to a large degree of wisdom, wise relating, knowing, having access to things that are to be known for wise acting, wise view, wise beingness. And the same with compassion. Oftentimes, this discerning mind is just quiet. If there's nothing for it to differentiate, it doesn't do anything. It's just a presence. If there's not a sorting, a distinction, a choosing, a taking responsibility at some level, then we can just be in this discerning mind. It's so nice, it's so grounding, so soothing to feel the presence of this discerning mind. Even though we may not be able to access it, we know that within us it already exists. So we're not striving to have discerning mind. We're being available for this finely tuned mind that can soften into experience, distinguish what's called for in the way of skillfulness and the way that it may not be skillful. So we're starting to feel the way to soften into our experience through very practical reflection. Then when we turn to arriving has this quality of a softness. It's as though when there is this mind that can differentiate, distinguish, discern, then everything starts to be coming as a reflection of that mind, all that is manifest versus that which is in potential but not manifest. That it has, there's a great deal of space around it. The meaning, our experience, that which has to be decided, chosen or not chosen. One can imagine using the discerning mind to get inside an experience. Do I go to this retreat next July? There's a softness present now, but alive with possibility, because we can distinguish so carefully. And therefore, our arriving, we bring a lot of wisdom in the arriving. Like we know to pause. If we can have a felt sense of, oh, I should pause. I'm not really ready to commit to arriving. I'm just not there yet. I need to get up and move even. But I'm not losing the thread. I'm just adjusting to circumstances in a recognizing way, not judging, comparing, fixing. Or maybe what we need to do is recognize the wholesomeness of the motive. And this is, you're in the midst of your workday, and a lot of decisions kind of get all scrunched up, and maybe you're not so pure motive at times. And yet we can come back to that feeling of the purity of the motive as we're bringing our mindfulness forth, our wholesomeness in relation to the motive for employing this arriving sequence, wholesomeness in what we are holding as truth that is to be found when it's wisdom and compassion, that we will be part of that process that holds, that supports our own learning, our own being, which includes supporting the ego, but not kowtowing to it. So arriving, arriving, arriving. And then we start to feel the here and nowness. We've started to learn how to be present in mindfulness. And that too feels good. And then we feel our availability, but the availability, even though we're opening to what's arising, we're not waiting to see if we like it. We open and know that we can reclaim our attention from it, our vulnerability from it. And this is strengthened by feeling this discerning mind. Strengthened simply by as best I am able. Because we don't imagine things and get tense about them. Strengthened by our own embodiment in the renunciations. And then aligning from this softening into, we are in this flow of the Dhamma. And it may be a very practical discussion that we're having to choose between. Do I accept this job or not accept this job? Leave, not leave? Change apartments from one apartment I'm working into another? In my house, am I leaving my house for another? Am I choosing to just go wander for a while? These could be lots of personality-based ego eliciting responses, reactions, really. But in this way of holding, having established this freedom around judging, comparing, and fixing, having felt the space when we are not controlled by that, just appreciating the ability we have. Practice becomes different, whether it's on the cushion or in daily life. So now, in our consciousness, we bring in the Brahma Viharas. Here we are, making a decision, choosing between, dealing with a disappointment, dealing with anxiety about something that's occurring in our lives. And we want it to be a practice moment where we're practicing practice. We've employed renunciations. We've employed the arriving in the moment and a way of being available. We've seen the use of this humility, dignity, integrity. And now we see, where's the role of meeting it with the Brahma Viharas, the appropriate Brahma Vihara, or maybe all of them? as we make this decision, we choose between, we accept that we are not going to get something we wanted, a relationship is ending, someone's sick and we don't know the outcome, but we do know we want to relate it to it as Dharma, with Dharma wisdom, Dharma compassion, as best we're able, that we're practicing practice with life, that we dance with life from a practicing with life. We're practicing practice in life, not acting as though we can control life in ways that are unrealistic, that actually reduce us in our choice, make our choices more narrow, sooner, more reactive. So now we're understanding this role of the Brahmaviharas. And we start with metta. Metta, this attitude, even of this decision, we can have we can have a friendly relationship with that which we don't really know what's the right relationship, but we're trusting that there can be a friendliness, a sympathetic friendliness to the decision. We don't have to be at war with ourselves. And we want to be generous as we can in this metta towards ourselves around making this decision or accepting this event or understanding what is to be done next. Much metta towards this decision making. May this process be done with friendliness. May it be done with kindness. May it be soft and moving towards well-being rather than negatively going against something. If there's fear present, then there be a friendly attitude towards fear. If there's anxiety, a friendly attitude towards anxiety. A kind of confidence in life. We're being generous in metta, this friendliness, caring towards life. So there's a sympathetic being able to stand under the difficulty of it. Can you feel this? And so maybe what's needed, though, is you're going to have to tell somebody no. You're going to have to fire someone or break up with them or not let them go to camp this summer or tell your elder relative that they have to go to a nursing home. Or that there's not enough money for something. And so this situation towards ourselves could be eliciting this compassion, this compassion feeling here and now, this karuna, or it's the other person, it's you and the other person, or it's just the other person. It's just to this situation in life here one more time, because the way our society's put together, maybe that no, there's I see why you have to go to the food bank, and so there's compassion, not pity. That's the near enemy, and not indifference. That's the far enemy. But with this available, you're now available. Now you're aligning with these Brahmaviharas. So this is the aligning that's specifically happening. Or maybe it's a situation where a decision has to be made, but it's between two great alternatives. This happens. Somebody gets into two colleges that they really wanted to get into, and now they've got to choose between both. And it's difficulty. There's some suffering in this. Because, as the old song used to say, you have to choose one and leave the other behind. And so there's a compassion for that amidst the great sympathetic joy, because this is so good fortune. But good fortune isn't free. There's always some downside to ordinary life experience. You'll choose the one and then worry about the other. That would the other one been better? Sharon Salzberg used to do this beautiful teaching about being with two different teachers. And when she'd be with one, she'd keep thinking, well, wonder what the other one's teaching now. Maybe that's where I should be. And so she'd go and then be over there and realize, well, but what about where I just left? Maybe that actually, that what he's going to do next is what I need. And how she had to sort that through. And so within this, we have sympathetic joy, but the sympathetic joy, we're happy for ourselves or for another, particularly others. And yet we understand that there's other parts to it. So we're aligned with the entirety of the understanding of the Brahma Viharas. Softening into, you know, this letting loose of the judging, comparing, and fixing, having this wisdom and compassion, having touched it, it's in the vibratory field. The mind's got this fine discernment ability to recognize what is suffering and not suffering, to recognize wise relationship and distinguish it from unwise relationship. And so, there we are dealing with that. And then what underlies and keeps the glue to all this from the Brahma Vihara practice is the equanimity. All people are responsible for their own karma, for their own happiness. Their own happiness. We may be helping make a decision, but they are responsible for their own happiness. And it may be not what happens, but how they relate to what happens. Your wisdom and your compassion allow you to discern at that level. Oh, I see. It's the clinging. It's the reactivity that's going to disappoint them. That's what they get caught in. Even if it's around something that's two good choices, but around going into the nursing home. The nursing home, if this is what has to happen, how do we help them have a wise relationship to it? A compassionate relationship. How can our mirroring, how can the way we hold them with equanimity, this upekkha, how do we hold others? How do we hold ourselves with compassion when we're not weighted down by that judging, comparing, and fixing? When we have access to humility, so we don't think we're supposed to be a miracle worker, and we have access to dignity, so even if others are disappointed in us, or we don't do that, we aren't that wise in our relating, our dignity can accept that, because we're just being human being as best we're able. And we stay in our practice, we stay as best we're able in integrity as we go through this life change, this life transition with someone or with ourselves. What's the felt sense of this for you? Can you feel the softness of this? So we start to have a vibratory feeling, an energetic feeling of the presence of the Dhamma as a whole through being available. We are available to life. We are available to Dhamma. And our alignment is with the Dhamma. So our orientation to our availability is to utilize these understandings, these skills that the Buddha has offered us. And we know from experience, hard-won experience, that attachment to outcome is futile. In the very best circumstances, something is great for a while and then it changes. You love playing tennis and you got a tennis scholarship, or your child did, and then you get hurt and no more tennis. We are not ignoring, denying, sticking our head in the sand about anicca in relation to dukkha. That things are always changing. You loved being in college, and then you were out, and it wasn't so good in the world. You loved being in a relationship, and now you're not in that relationship. That's anicca. It's just change. We're having a personal experience of an impersonal law. Things change. The whole of the Dhamma can support us through this. We're not ready to leave our job, but we're forced to retire. Dukkha, dukkha. But just anicca causing dukkha. Our caring can support this. Our willingness to let things be difficult, because they are difficult, and therefore they don't define us, but they sure do characterize us. We really are disappointed about this. We're disappointed about putting our mother in the nursing home, or disappointed about the cancer, or disappointed about the job loss, or the way our country is, or the way people are being treated. It can be any scale level, but we can still know it. It can still be contained in the wisdom and the compassion of the Dhamma using all these tools. Right now, this may seem really possible. You can feel the aliveness of that possibility, how rich it is, how it changes the experience. So, but will you always be able to do this? I wouldn't think so. Well, every occasion you'd be able to do it. No. Well, how about in one occasion, you've got this and you're relating in this wisdom and compassion way. Is it going to last through the whole experience? Probably not. Probably it will at best come and go. Or there's just one aspect of it that it can stay with. There's no demand. There's no demand. We're not humiliated because we can't do everything well, that everything doesn't turn out well. Our dignity is not based on our ability to make everything turn out well. We have the humility of understanding our own limitation, both of us and of life itself. This is a realm of opposites. Again, as I said Friday night, the worldly winds of gain and loss, pain and pleasure, fame and blame. We accept the realm we're in. We wish to have a wise and compassionate relationship with it. We are available to dance with life. We have perspective. But dancing with life, life steps on our toes. It runs us into things. Have you noticed? The music changes and you weren't ready. Or there's a night time for, let's have a little break here. Let's have a little pause. But life lives as life lives. And there is or is not a pause for recovery. And in our strength, in our wisdom, in our compassion, in our humility, in our dignity, in our integrity, we accept that that's true. And we're in a wholesome relationship with the truth of dukkha. It's wholesome. It's not that we're always in it in a full access, so we're kind of uplifted, but we're in general in it, and we feel the reassurance. It's our ground. These qualities that we've gone through in this sit, they naturally arise once we've identified them, once we understand the circumstances that bring them forward. They naturally come forward. We don't have to do a lot of doing, but there is some knowing, and there's a lot of being with and letting the natural wisdom arise based on our experience, the natural compassion, knowing that we, the great value of letting loose of judging, comparing, and fixing, the cultivation of this humility and dignity and integrity. This is the dance. It's the dance of the Four Noble Truths, seen in a different iteration. It's that very dance. Does it matter that we're conscious? Does it matter that we have choice? Does it matter that we're available? Cynics would say not much. I say just the opposite. I say, although there's so little freedom we have, the exercising of that little bit of freedom makes all the difference in the world and in life. What do you say? Difference in how? Difference in having a uplifting relationship with life, no matter how it's dancing. Having a presence, being able to witness and give witness to life, to be inside these experiences, whether they're joyful or saddening, we can rest inside them and see the truth of life, the truth of the worldly winds that the Buddha tells, and that there's still choice, that we don't lose dignity, we don't lose integrity, we're not destroyed by humiliation, because we have a ground of humility. Dharma on the street of life, making the street of life your monastery.